From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Stephanie Mosqueda. It's Tuesday, June 4th. Coming up, we'll learn more about a growing field of study that is searching for ways to get calories and kilowatts off the same land. That story in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. A popular state tax credit used by millions of Illinoisans will be going up for the 2024 tax year. Dave McKinney has more.
The standard exemption benefits millions of Illinoisans. Lawmakers last week agreed to fund the jump, increasing the credit by $350. That means a family of four will save about $70 in tax filings they submit next year. Former Governor Pat Quinn first tied that exemption to inflation, but lawmakers quietly paused that inflation escalator last year, and Quinn is glad it's coming back.
For the state not to index the personal exemption amount to inflation and the cost of living, was really taking money out of the pockets of everyday people.
Governor J.B. Pritzker is supportive of the increase. Dave McKinney, WBEZ News.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker joined Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey for a press conference on Monday to express their support for the Right to Contraception Act. The legislation will be voted on in the U.S. Senate later this week. If passed, it would protect Americans' right to access contraceptives, including birth control pills and emergency contraception. It will also protect healthcare providers who deliver contraceptive care. Healey says this bill is about protecting women's health.
It certainly can be used as a method of family planning. It also has critical health benefits. Many women rely on contraception to protect against a whole bunch of things. Ovarian cancers, anemia, endometrial cancers, painful cramps, cysts, and more.
Pritzker and Healey both say the timing of the bill's passage is even more important now, ahead of the upcoming presidential election. A Sangamon County judge heard arguments on Monday on a Republican request to block a state ban on election slating. The ban would forbid political parties from putting a candidate on the ballot in the general election if they had not run in the party's primary. Capital News Illinois reports, the law moved quickly from passage in the legislature to Governor J.B. Pritzker's signature last month. But the GOP says it's unfair to ban the practice in the middle of an election cycle. Four plaintiffs have filed nominating petitions to be on the November ballot in Illinois this year. But if the law is upheld, they may not be allowed to run. Judge Gail Knoll could issue an order in the case in the upcoming days. Dozens more former youth inmates are suing over alleged sexual abuse they endured at Illinois detention centers. 13 women and 95 men filed two separate lawsuits on Friday. They're each seeking $2 million in damages. The lawsuits contain disturbing allegations that guards, teachers, and counselors at multiple juvenile detention centers around the state sexually abused the plaintiffs between 1997 and 2019. A similar lawsuit on behalf of former youth inmates was filed in May by the same New York law firm. The firm has filed suits in other states as well. In a statement, the Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice said they take youth safety seriously, and the lawsuits concerned allegations under previous administrations. Still to come, we'll learn more about a growing field of study that is searching for ways to get calories and kilowatts off the same land. That story is coming up next on 217 Today.
Next time on the 21st Show, our week-long investigation into fentanyl continues as we turn to the politics of the crisis. We'll talk about how it's being weaponized nationally and hear different perspectives on what Illinois ought to be doing. I'm Brian Mackey. That's next time on the 21st Show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Stephanie Mosqueda. America needs more renewable energy, and of course, it needs food. And those two demands are on a collision course over farmland. Solar power is the fastest growing source of renewable power. But solar farms can take land out of crop production. As Harvest Public Media's Frank Morris reports, a growing field of study is searching for ways to get calories and kilowatts off the same land.
Across the river from an old coal-fired power plant near Lawrence, Kansas, a stiff breeze sweeps over farm fields. Scott Thelman, a farmer who grows a mix of organic and conventional crops nearby, loves this soil.
It's the best. It's absolutely the best our county and frankly our region has. Plants are really able to thrive here and continually, year over year, consistently produce an economically viable crop.
But it's also a convenient place to build a solar farm. And the county commission recently approved an 1,100-acre photovoltaic project here. Thelman hates losing land that's so well suited to crop production, and he's not alone. Congresswoman Mary Miller, an Illinois Republican, has introduced a bill that would force the USDA to evaluate the impact of solar farms on farm production. But in Ames, Iowa, researchers are looking for a kind of a compromise.
So it's still a construction site.
Matt O'Neill, an entomology professor at Iowa State University, is opening the gate to a 10-acre plot that could help put the farm back in solar farm.
It's a solar farm. We're producing electricity. It's 1.8 megawatts, enough for 200 homes. But it's also a site for experiments.
The solar panels are at different heights. Some track the sun, some don't. So researchers can find out how various plants do in different growing environments. They're not growing corn and soybeans here, the big crops in Iowa. There's not nearly enough space. Ajay Naya, incoming chair of the horticulture department, says they're focusing on fruits and vegetables.
And when we talk about fruits and vegetables, these crops or these plants love full sun. The first thing that strikes anybody is like, oh, is there enough light for the plants to grow? Which is a valid question.
In fact, there are a lot of questions. The ground under solar panels isn't just shadier, it's cooler, less breezy, and more humid. Naya's planting several different crops between, under, and around the panels, starting with his favorite, little shoots of broccoli, fresh from the greenhouse.
This is some very important broccoli.
This will be the solar broccoli. Yeah, but we are looking forward to this experiment.
Earlier experiments with what people call agrivoltaics haven't always gone so well. 3 years ago, a power company in Maine paneled over a field of wild blueberries. Lily Calderwood, wild blueberry specialist at the University of Maine, says the plants changed.
They look healthy, but they have more leaves because they're in the shade. And so any plant will grow more leaves and increase the surface area of their little solar panels to capture as much light as they can.
Problem is, they're producing a lot fewer berries, too few to justify the farmer's time and effort. So growing food on solar farms isn't easy, but it may be necessary. We're shutting down reliable coal-fired plants at the same time we're electrifying everything from transportation to cooking and heating. Matt O'Neill says a lot of that new generating capacity will come from utility-scale solar.
So are you going to have solar panels in farmland? Yes. Does that mean you can't farm? No. Are you going to be able to farm the way you used to? Probably not. There's going to be some adjusting. But that farming could be different, and could it be profitable? Well, that's the question.
It's an open question. Other agrivoltaics test sites have produced hopeful results, but on a tiny scale, too small for commercial farms. Back in Kansas, farmer Scott Thelman says agrivoltaics has become a buzzword, an unproven concept used to promote solar farms.
You know, I think there's potential. I don't know if we should be using our nation's best ag ground for it.
Thelman's worried that the rapid expansion of solar energy will take a bite out of Midwestern crop production before anybody figures out a profitable way to grow food on a solar farm. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Frank Morris.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and the Great Plains. And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says it'll be partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in a high of 84 degrees. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by Dave McKinney, Jade Marceau, and Frank Morris. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.